Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
Hello and you're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City, and I'm Frances Nesbitt from Crow and Cottages, and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey from Hedgehog Bakery. We're live today, Friday, from 4 to 5, and the show is repeated on Monday at the same time. Now, we'd love to hear from you during the show today, so please feel free to send us any questions or comments that you might have on any of the topics that we cover, and you can get in touch with the show by text to 086 353 7782. You can call the station on 776-2777 or email kitchengarden@crkc.ie at any stage during the week. Now, on the show today, we're going to be bringing you the usual mix of food news, nature notes, seasonal recipes, and we'll also remind you of some jobs that need to get done in the garden around about now. But it's been a busy food week here in Kilkenny. Mags, how are you?
I'm good.
How was your Savour Kilkenny Festival?
Oh, it was great, actually. Really nice Savour. I think the new layout, kind of a longer avenue of food producers and tents and everything, probably worked really well, actually. So there was loads of benches and places for people to sit, and probably made it easier. Well, definitely much more comfortable to get around, and more sociable, actually, because you wouldn't kind of, you could sit down and a bit more casual sort of dining outside. So it was really good.
Numbers were up, I believe, on
previous
years.
I would think so, actually. The I was in one of the demo tents, the Marble City tent, the Marble, and it was pretty much jammers for most of the demos, actually. And really good atmosphere. People were so excited at meeting their chefs and all that, so it was very good. The one of the really nice ones was the O'Connells of Cullahill, so Doreena Allen and Rory O'Connell and Blanid Bergen and a few more of those. They did kind of a little talk session, so and the tent was absolutely jammers. You couldn't get in the door for that, but it was really nice. It was them talking really about growing up in Cullahill and where their kind of food inspiration came from, and their mother and cooking, and what they're doing now and that. But that was really nice, really well attended, as all of them were. Lots of them were.
I was talking to Blanid about that at Food on the Edge a couple of weeks ago, and she was telling me that the family were really, really touched that Savour were going to, you know, gather them all together and kind of celebrate their clan. And she thought it was testament to her mother who had passed, and they were all very touched.
Yeah, well, they actually all spoke a lot about growing up and their mother. Their father had died when they were very young. It was really nice, actually. I think nearly anybody could identify with some of their stories and that, so it was very nice. And they were presented then with beautiful bridge pottery bowls at the end, so that was lovely. Another one that demo that was very popular was Clash of the Ash, so it was the hurlers. So people love that and the crack about that.
Were the lads cooking?
Yeah, they were kind of, yeah, they were. Eugene McSweeney did a great demo as well, actually. People loved him, and as I was kind of backstage in that, he was probably the most organised chef I have ever seen and stuff. He didn't need any help. Yeah. A lovely man, and he got a really nice reception.
He's
and stuff.
A proper chef, though. Let's face it, like a proper chef. Yeah, the former owner of Lachlan House here in Kilkenny, before Michelin ever came to Ireland, I'd imagine. That would have been on their radar had they been around the place, had they been anywhere outside France. Fabulous restaurant back in the day.
Yes.
We might have him in again at Christmas, actually, to talk about some Christmas tips for listeners in the kitchen.
Yes.
Yeah, very good lad.
My actual highlight, though, had to be Kevin Thornton, actually, who, apart from being an absolute gentleman and really nice backstage, did just an amazing demo. He was marinating pigeons, which I think he'd probably caught himself that morning, I'm not sure, or shot in hay. Now, there was stuff everywhere when he was finished, but he did really good food. He had truffles that had been gathered up in the Midlands somewhere. I didn't even know we had truffles in Ireland. So he was, like, seriously educating people. He got a great reception, and then he did a forage through Kilkenny Castle to the Castle Park afterwards with the group. So he was very impressive, actually.
Very interesting man.
Very interesting. Really, he sort of went at quite a different level to some of the other demos in that.
Yeah.
He was introducing things that people were absolutely blown away by, and he had all sorts of equipment on the stage as well.
He loves his gadgets.
Really interesting, actually.
I've seen him cook a goat on an open fire one time.
I'd say there's nothing he couldn't cook, to be honest.
Brilliant man to follow on social media as well, on Instagram. He posts some amazing photographs. So if you don't follow him, you should. Now, there was something else went on at Savour Kilkenny this year, and that's the Taste Kilkenny crew. So that's all of the food producers in Kilkenny. They pick every year some worthy recipients of some prizes. And one of the prizes that they gave out is the Local Food Hero, so the Hero Buyer Award. So that's to a business in Kilkenny that supports the local artisan food producers. And one of the winners of that was the lovely Little Green Grocer in Kilkenny. And we're delighted to be joined by Sarah Duggan, co-owner of the Little Green Grocer. Sarah, how are you?
Good afternoon. I'm great.
Move a little bit closer to that microphone there, Sarah. And thanks a million for coming in to us, and congratulations on the award.
Thank you. We're thrilled.
Well,
we're
done.
We're chuffed to be voted by our gorgeous producers, you know, to receive this award. It's great.
It's nice to be recognised. But fair play to you for helping them out, really, because you're providing a retail space in town where they can kind of sell their wares.
Yes. Well, we start local when we're looking for various products. We start local, and in Kilkenny we're very lucky. Such a diverse collection of producers.
It's fantastic, yes. Producers we have locally. And which of them do you stock in the shop?
Speltbakers, Highbank, Riversfield Farm, Joan and Bob's, Second Nature Oils. There's just the ones off the top of my head
there. Yeah, there's
plenty,
quite a
more.
Few there.
Yes.
So that's everything from jam to oil to Speltbakers to bread. And your award, what was it? Was there some manifestation of the award? Or was
there
just
was a lovely plaque.
Oh, lovely.
With a lovely black and amber logo on it.
It's a very nice plaque, isn't it?
It's a Kilkenny plaque.
A Kilkenny
for
plaque.
For a Kilkenny shop.
Brilliant. And it'll go up in the shop, I hope.
It will indeed.
Yeah, excellent. Get the daddy into hanging on the wall
well,
for you.
I might even manage it myself.
Oh, well done. Now, you were telling me just before we came on air that there were three Hero Buyer Awards given out this year. So there was yourselves as the retail recipient, is that it?
Yes. Actually, this year they chose two retail recipients. One was Gerry O'Brien's Butchers.
Ah, right, okay.
And ourselves, and then a restaurant, Zuni.
Ah, for supporting local
for
producers
supporting
as well.
And buying from local producers.
Okay.
Yes.
And people can find out more about the local producers here in Kilkenny on the Taste Kilkenny website. I know we've mentioned it a number of times before on the show, but there's Taste Kilkenny. And then they have a fantastic map as well, where you can kind of travel around the county and visit some of the producers that are open to visitors. So it's well worth checking out. But back to yourselves then in Little Green Grocer. Were you busy during Savour?
We were. We had our own event on the Saturday afternoon. We had Edmundbury Microgreens. So they're I suppose, not in County Kilkenny, but they're very close to us in Durrow.
Oh, just only, in County Leash.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And so Nick from Edmundbury gave a lovely talk. He showed the different stages of the production of the microgreens, you know, from seed, germination, to, you know, beautiful shoots. A short time later.
And getting harvested and then bagged up and ready for
absolutely.
It at the shop.
Yeah.
People love when they come to do one of the cookery courses or anything out at Crowan. I like to have microgreens ready for them to use as decoration on the plate or ingredients that they might use in the courses. And they go mad for them. They absolutely go mad for them, because most of the time when you look at a little tiny seedling like that, if you're growing in the garden, you're trying to protect it. You're not going to rip some of the leaves off and taste them. But a fantastic flavour from them.
Yes, and they just look stunning. You know, it dresses a plate beautifully. Mm. A simple, you know, very simple, whether it's a steak you're cooking or a piece of fish or your lunchtime sandwich, whatever it is, a dressing of these now, a sprinkle of these over it, and it just looks gorgeous.
And you sell those in the shop
we
as well?
We do indeed, yes.
In little bags?
In little bags,
oh,
yes.
Oh, very good, very good. And will he keep that going all the way through the winter now?
Yes, now through the summer, there would have been beautiful colours of the different flowers, so he has had to adjust it a little bit. So there, at the moment, I think there's little pansies in there, and then it will move on to micro leaves to replace some of the flowers that are not there. And the micro leaves are add a bit of crunch. Extra crunch to the micros.
Oh, very good, very good. You're great for running some of the events. You had a beekeeping.
Yes, we had the name has just gone out of my head. Pressure of this local radio.
Yeah, yeah. But that was during the summer. You had
no, that was Savour last year.
Savour last year.
Yes.
Oh, right. Okay.
We had Podge Mead. No, sorry. Podge is the son. Yeah. What's his name? James Mead.
Yes.
Sorry, apologies. He has beautiful honey down in Carrickinshaw, and he is just totally obsessed with the bees and just adores.
As beekeepers tend to be.
Absolutely. You being one of them yourself, you probably
can. Did you know, interesting thing about bees. No, don't start me. Don't start me. There's loads of interesting things about bees.
They are fascinating.
Fascinating creatures. Yes. No, fair play to you. That's a lovely thing to kind of be doing down in the shop, getting people in. And you're doing wine tasting down there as well, I remember, not so long ago.
Yes, a few years ago we had Mary Paul from, she's an organic wine producer from Kenmare, supplies quite a lot of our wines and is very passionate about what she does and only supplies exclusively organic wines. And most of hers are from Europe, which is what we believe in. Our wine collection is just European. You know, keep the air miles down.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have amazing wine in Europe. We don't need to leave.
Yeah, it's true. Now, speaking of people who are passionate about what they do, I know yourself and your sister are very passionate about the stuff that you stock in the shop, and everything goes through a kind of rigorous due diligence before it's allowed on the shelves.
Absolutely. Myself and Eleanor are very passionate about food and clean food and local food. So one of our, I suppose, our biggest things is when people come in with a product, one of the first questions is there egg in that? And the answer has to be, is that it's free range egg.
Right, very good. Yeah.
So it's, and if there's meat, it has to be free range meat or organic, preferably.
Yeah.
Free range, yeah.
Well, fair play to you, like imposing those kind of limits on the stuff that you stock, because it means that anything that we buy in the little greengrocer, we can be sure that we have a clean conscience when we do it.
Absolutely, yeah. Cold-pressed oils, extra virgin cold-pressed oils, and mostly organic oils as well. So if a product like a pesto contains an oil, it will be a cold-pressed oil.
But it's not just in the shop. In fairness, you live by those sort of rules yourself too.
She probably does a bit of shopping in her own shop, so it makes it a bit easier for her. But no, if people demanded that of our retailers, and then our retailers demanded that of the producers, you can see how very quickly it works its way up the food chain. Whereas if we chase the cheapest and the lowest common denominator, you know, in a massive multiple, then very quickly, you know, we shouldn't be surprised when animals are kept in tiny little cages and so on.
Yes, absolutely, because animal welfare is very important to us. I actually do eat meat and I eat fish. Eleanor doesn't eat meat. I would rather eat small amounts of, you know, high quality, well cared for meat rather than, you know, large amounts of, yes, not so good stuff.
Yeah, well, it's a message that we kind of give out in the show regularly. Now, I have some bad news for you, Sarah. I'm now keeping and producing my own kefir, so I won't be in to buy the bottles of kefir. I got addicted by the stuff that I got from yourselves, and then I went off and found some grains, and I'm keeping it now in the fridge, and it's
absolutely
growing away.
It's quite an easy thing.
It's a very easy thing.
It's one of those things, you know, we talk to people about it in the shop, and, you know, because we've had grains from time to time, and people kind of look at you funny when you're trying to explain. It's so simple that it actually sounds complicated until you go home with your milk and your grains and you just do it, and it's, you know, so straightforward.
And of all of these kind of products that you can keep as a pet, like Mags and her starter, or the...
I have one of those too.
Yeah. I like the kefir in that it kind of talks to you. So when it's hungry, there's a clear kind of liquid on the bottom, the whey is on the bottom, and the grains start to float. So it's like, feed me, it's shouting at you, you know, you need to give it some milk. It doesn't just up and die on you without any warning. So I like it. It lives in my fridge, now I open my door, and I won't say I talk to it, but, you know, I do. So congratulations again on the prize, Hero Buyer Award, and you were presented it during Saver, were you?
Yes, after JP McMahon's talk.
Oh, right.
JP and his children. There was quite an entourage on the stage, so JP and the children were presenting.
Yeah.
Yes.
JP had the kids up at the on stage at the end of Food on the Edge as well, in front of an auditorium of 600 people, and the girls were well able for it. I get the impression that they're put centre stage quite a bit.
I get the impression they are as well, actually.
Very famous daddy, though. Very famous daddy. I hope they don't tell any tales of, like, chips and eggs for dinner when they go to school, but I'm sure they don't. Well, congratulations again, Sarah, and best of luck to yourself and Eleanor down in the Little Green Grocer in Kilkenny. And if listeners aren't familiar with the shop, shame on you. You should go and you should go often. It's a fabulous place. Now, we better take an ad break, and we'll be back just after these. text us on 086 353 7782. You can email the show, kitchengarden@ckc.ie. And you're very welcome back to the Kitchen Garden on Kilkenny, or Community Radio Kilkenny City. Almost forgot the name of the station there. I'm Francis Nesbitt from Crowine Cottages, and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey. And we're live today, Friday, from 4 to 5. So send us in any questions or comments you might have by text to 086 353 7782. Or you can email the show at any stage during the week, kitchengarden@ckc.ie. And I see a couple of congratulation text messages in there for the girls in the Greengrocer, and fair play to them. I'll pass them on later. And it is a brilliant job that they do down there. And we're kind of spoiled, Mags, in Kilkenny by not only the producers who picked the award, but by the retailers, like all of the sponsors of this show, for example.
Yes, we are, really. There's lots of good food to buy in that. Mm. And in the city centre, like, you know, we've a lovely city, and then there's lovely shops in the city.
Easy to get at, and not all mad expensive either. Like, great value
to be
had.
Great quality stuff. Yeah. So we are very lucky, aren't we?
I've travelled around Ireland quite a bit and stayed in some towns where if you're cooking or you're staying with somebody and they're going to cook, geez, the dearth of quality, you know, food retailers nearby, it just changes your life. You know, if you're able to reach out and get stuff for a dish that you want to cook nearby and it's easy, it's great. You only really notice it when it's not there.
You do, actually. You kind of stop appreciating it when you get used to something like that. So, yeah,
we are. So you hang out in Kilkenny, or you hang out in West Cork, or you hang out in Galway, or, you know, South County Dublin, it's brilliant. But then you're in the middle of the Midlands.
Or West Cork.
Yeah, you could be badly stuck for finding something. So, a busy week. The first year in years that I didn't make it into Kilkenny for any of Savour, because out at my place I had 2 days really full on, Saturday and Sunday, of 12 or 14 people each day learning about butchery. And so I was cooking and treating them all day, as well as looking after the needs of the two butchers. And there were a couple of members of staff there as well, one of whom, a young chap that we were kind of trying to train up. Mother of God, I was exhausted, mostly by the training up of the young chap, now it has to be said.
I think on a busy day, having... trying to do a bit of training as well can be a bit tricky.
Do you know one of those?
You want to be able to say something and them to know what you're talking about, even before you actually kind of know it yourself.
Even the basics, though, like, will you put that outside? What? Yeah. This? Yes. Where do you want it again? Outside. What did you say?
Do you remember when you were a teenager? Maybe you weren't that kind of a teenager.
I hope I wasn't that kind of a teenager. Yeah.
My teenager was helping me at Savour, and I have to say, a year ago, big difference in a year. Like, she was on the ball this time. Like, good. She was actually super help, and people were asking her for things because they knew she would actually work it out and go and solve problems and things like that. So,
brilliant.
You know, they do grow up and stuff. I suppose they need experience doing these sort of things and
it's true.
Sometimes you need, it's hard to have patience for that type of thing.
Yeah, I wouldn't be the most patient person in the world anyway.
Really?
No. Shockingly impatient. It probably wasn't. He probably has decided now that he doesn't want to work in hospitality.
He doesn't work with you.
Wants to be nowhere near people. Actually, maybe just spend all of his time with animals or in a lighthouse. That might suit him.
Okay.
With a big reminder to turn on the light and instructions on how to do it.
But all your customers, all your students were happy.
They were delighted. And I had some lovely reviews afterwards. People sending in emails after the fact, and thanks so much and all of that. Sometimes you'd teach a class of 12 people and they'd go away and you'd never hear anything ever again. And they said on their way out they had a lovely time, but, you know, nice to get a bit of feedback afterwards. So to get, I don't know what, 5, maybe 6... messages via email or on social media or whatever afterwards.
That's really
a quarter
nice.
Of the class. That's really,
and the others
really
were
nice.
Probably happy, just didn't, you know.
Yeah, that's a high
people tend to percentage. Be more quicker to kind of make a, if they weren't happy, to let you know on that. So
yes, indeed.
You can take it, the others were, I suppose, were happy.
Yeah. It's a cold couple of days, though. Like that, thankfully, we sent out a note beforehand kind of to tell people, but everybody came warmly wrapped up, because you're working with meat, so you have to work at kind of like 3 to 5 to 6 degrees, you know, to keep the meat fresh.
And it was really cold last weekend.
The weather was really perfect. Crisp and dry and bright, but really, really, really cold. And
Sure. Can I actually just tell you one thing? I know I'm interrupting with this, but remember we were talking about the autumn colours and we were saying they're brighter this year than other years. There's one other reason that I didn't know at the time. I just was talking to somebody during the week. Because of the really hot summer, there was additional photosynthesis went on, all of the sunlight, which would have made an awful lot of more chlorophyll, which is the green colouring. And then that green colouring gets transferred into carotene, the reds and the oranges in autumn, but because there was more green during the summer, there's more colour now in the autumn.
Yeah, I wouldn't agree with that. Because chlorophyll doesn't convert to carotene.
Okay.
So the carotene is there all the time. You only see the green because it's filled with, the leaves are filled with chlorophyll. So in the winter, that's reabsorbed by the tree, and so you see the reds and the yellows that were always there, but which were masked by the green. So what may be the case is that there's more leaves because there was more sun, or there was more growth on the trees, but it's not one converts to the other. So I would disagree with your informant during the week.
Okay.
Now, back to my butchery course. Thanks for interrupting me. Feel free to interrupt me whenever you like there with stuff that I'll argue with then. So it was, we started the day with a really good exercise. We'd never done it before, but excellent kind of a method for kind of practicing nice knife skills. The two butchers brought out a load of chickens and everybody got a chicken. And they had to go in and bone the chicken and carve up the chicken into its primary cuts. Really fiddly little thing to do. You know, much easier actually on a big side of pork, which they did later in the day, or a whole deer. Great to see them kind of getting in with the chicken and the knife.
I'd love to be able to do that, actually.
Yeah.
That's very useful, because not everyone's going to butcher a deer next week, but everyone, I suppose, will do something with a chicken.
And I took away the chickens then to cook their lunch, and it was amazing when I was then working with these bits that they'd cut up to see there are some people in the class incredibly fastidious and talented, and look how neatly that breast was cut off the bird. And then there were some people, this is, you know,
was there a surgeon among them,
an introduction to butchery, you know, because the difference, it was incredible. It really was, but it was a great couple of days and a great savour, and well done to all involved. Now, Thornton was the highlight for you then of events in town?
Yeah, he was, definitely. Mm. I think for quite a few people, but depending on what you're into, I suppose. But yeah, I learned, like, you know, when you're actually inspired and new foods, you know, and new way of thinking. And I would agree with a lot of his ways in that. And I'd have followed him for a long time and stuff. I'd be quite a fan, I suppose. But he was just so gentlemanly backstage and very gracious and appreciative and everything, which is very nice as well.
Not a prima donna.
Oh, absolutely. The opposite.
Yeah,
wanted to wash his own pots type person. Very, very normal, actually. So, yeah, very
kind
nice.
I get the impression he's kind of worked, you know, he's had a lot of years of very hard work to get where he was with the Michelin star. Losing it was a kind of sobering experience, I'm sure.
Yeah.
The restaurant closing and moving into education and training now. Big changes.
He ran the restaurant for a long time and actually was there a few times and stuff. Very impressive, very impressive food and service and everything. And, you know, he came from very normal background and stuff and would have just learned food as he went along. Just had an inherent, he came from, he's from Tipperary actually, inherent interest in it from his mother, I think it was as well. But he just goes kind of beyond, you know, looking for things, for food in things that we haven't even thought about and that. So he's quite, and his philosophy on food is very good.
He spends a lot of time travelling and with indigenous peoples and stuff around the world.
Yeah.
I've seen him in Africa and Asia and all kinds of places like that. Yeah. Wouldn't be afraid of sticking some insects into his mouth or anything like that.
No.
He'd try anything.
No, he would, yeah, yeah.
Now, it wasn't just Savour, of course, this week. It was also Halloween. A busy Halloween over at Hedgehog House?
Yes, it was busy Halloween. It's like probably my kids' favourite time of the year. They go, I actually quite like it as well. And the trick-or-treating is the epiphany of Halloween for small children. And it's only for a couple of years. They don't do it when they're teenagers, I suppose. But I really thought this year there was such a nice atmosphere and such kind of a nice community spirit and a really nice sense of neighbourliness. You know, there's not that many kids around where we live, but all of the neighbours like invited the kids in, even though they were dressed in enormous costumes, and I was terrified they were going to knock ornaments off tables and all sorts of things. Invited them in, chatted, gave them sweets and money and everything, and we're really happy to see them. So it was a very nice atmosphere, and we were in the village as well for a while, and there was just like hordes of children running left, right, and centre, and that. But so I actually thought it's a nice way. You don't sometimes there are people that you don't see for the rest of the year, and you see them at Halloween, and they're ready and they have their lights on and bowls filled. There's one neighbour actually who listens to the show sometimes. He didn't have a bowl; he had a basin. You could have bathed a small child in what he had ready. Which was really nice, actually, and nice for the kids, actually.
It is. Do you know, it took me a long time to get into Halloween, because I grew up on the north side of Dublin, and Halloween on the north side of Dublin, I have to say, is just chaos. It's mayhem. It's like you've handed a license to every gurrier on the street to just be at his worst. And that night, there's stuff is torched and there's bonfires with billowing black smoke, and it's just an awful, awful time of the year. And all of those reports that you hear on the radio about the fire brigade getting attacked and ambulance drivers getting attacked, all of that stuff actually happens. It's like one night of chaos. So I never liked it. And when I moved to the country, I brought that kind of prejudice with me. And it was actually a bit of a pain when people started to call to the door and you had to pretend to be into it. But then my own kids started to dress up and all of that. And over the years, the weariness of all of that nastiness in Dublin has worn off me. I love it now. I really do. This is the first year I realise I've put so much effort into this over the last few years. I have to stop saying I hate Halloween, because I don't.
You enjoy it.
I love it. Yeah. I absolutely love it. So this year I had my own mask, and whenever kids came to the door, I opened the door as quickly as I could, jumped out and screamed at them, and I made them cry. It was brilliant.
Okay, I did something slightly different.
There was one group of kids at my house, and I saw them walking up and they were hanging back from the door for ages. Eventually I jumped out and I screamed and they all got a fright. And then one girl said, "Now I told you you'd do that." That they were arguing about who would open the door. Well, it was fantastic, but very few callers. I suppose it depends on the age of the neighbours and all of that.
Yeah, well, at my house it was only two callers. We weren't there. We were actually out for about 2 hours, but they were actually when we came back. So yeah, it's pity. But I put lights on the candles all around the water pump up at it used to be a village back in the day and stuff, and there's just a couple of houses there now, and a pumpkin, and the neighbours loved it. So I felt they gave sweets to my kids, I felt I gave something and stuff. So it was a nice there was a nice feel to the place actually on that night. And the German woofer who's still with us had never carved a pumpkin.
Good Lord.
So I bought her a pumpkin and she carved it. And the pigs.
Brilliantly.
Perfectly. Perfectly. Absolutely perfectly. Now, there'd be tough competition in our house for carving of pumpkins and stuff when Tom was pretty good at it. But hers was perfect. So it went on the gatepost. Hers went on the gatepost.
Actually, you've just reminded me, I think I have two pumpkins still down on the gatepost at home. I've no pigs to feed them to.
Oh, the
this
chickens
year.
Will pick at them.
Yeah, that's the plan.
Or the peacocks
the plan.
Might, yeah.
Yeah. Let the chickens have a go. But it's the first year that I didn't have pigs to throw them over the fence to. They love them.
Oh, they go mad for them.
They really do. Mm. They absolutely love the pumpkin, yeah.
Although someone said they fed a lot of pumpkins to their pigs last year, and then they had like a pile of pumpkins growing in the pig's stomach.
Oh, because the seeds were all spread.
I'm okay with that, actually.
Yeah. I had courgettes growing up in the pig paddock 1 year. But sure, it's no harm. No harm at all. And then I didn't get into the pumpkins event that was on out in Thomastown this year, the first, but I did see some photographs on social media that it was a nice little kind of gathering on the first, the night after Halloween, where they gather together all of the pumpkins in there for one last show before they all get composted, which is a really nice thing to do.
Yeah, it looked really nice. Mm. I was down in Inishtig at the filming of a Christmas ad.
Inishtig used in filming locations, shocker. Yes. Inishtig, yet again, going to be on the small screen this time.
Small screen, TV screen. So 4 days of filming for a 40-second ad.
For Dunstores, is it?
Dunstores Christmas ad.
All right, so this is like the John Lewis of Ireland.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there is a story. They're still filming today. We were there for hours last night. I hope to God that one of mine, who put huge effort into his part, gets... second on TV.
What was his part? What did he have to do?
Well, we were kind of, they were part of the, you know, the extras.
Right.
But then he, because he was so enthusiastic, got picked to do another little piece.
Okay.
He and one of his cousins. So, fingers crossed.
He makes it to
the end. He makes it. He got to do a few little other bits, but like 4 days of filming for 40 seconds, there's going to be a lot of cuts, you know?
Yeah, really, really.
So, but it was very interesting. Interesting to see how it all operates. Like, yeah. It's another world.
Fake. Really. It's a fake world with fake snow and fake etc. etc.
Oh, the snow was completely fake. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the pictures that I saw on social media looked amazing.
Oh yeah, it looks super. Mm. And I'm sure when you see the ad, it'll look amazing.
Tugging at the heartstrings. I was surprised actually that they're producing it so late. It's November.
I was surprised. Look, I'm thinking it should be on TV next week or the week after.
Really? I would have thought they'd be filming this. Now unless it's Christmas 2019, they're filming.
I don't think so. Maybe they'll turn it around really quickly. I don't know. So the kids all were given Dunn Stores hats to wear. So at like 20 past 11 or whatever it was last night, I kind of thought they were going to get that, to keep the hats. It was freezing cold and stuff, but they all had to take off their hats and hand them back as we were leaving.
Oh my God, you're joking. And was there any fee given out? Or did anybody get anything for doing this?
No, not yet anyway. I don't know.
Oh, Lord.
But it was good for them to see how it works. As one boy said it was the best night of his life and the other boy said it was the worst night of his life.
Oh, your two boys. Yeah, oh, yeah. God. I think I can guess which is which there. Yeah. So a busy weekend and a busy saver.
Yeah.
That's that for another year. And speaking of another year, happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you too.
Not to you personally, but to us as a show.
Yes.
It's a year on air now and a year Community Radio Kilkenny City is back in its current guise.
And it's this week, isn't it?
It is this week, yes. It was just before Saver last week. So we've done kind of 52 weeks now. Yeah. So we've done a year. So congratulations us.
Well done us, actually.
Yeah, well done us. And we haven't repeated a topic more than, you know, 15 or 16 times, I'd say.
What was your highlight of the year?
Oh, God, now there's a question. Yeah. Oh, Lord. We should have.
I've been thinking about this.
Oh,
you
have you? Yeah. Oh, God. Well, what was your highlight of the year then?
There's been a few and stuff. One highlight, though, you know, when you, if you just ask that question, what comes into your head straight away without overthinking it and that? It was when my friend Shan came in last Christmas and talked about non-food stuff mostly, but Fair City. She's a scriptwriter in Fair City and the ad that she featured in like years ago and that. I just found her very entertaining.
I spent hours trying to find that ad for her, actually.
Yeah, well, she appreciated that you did, but yeah. So that was one, and there's been lots of other quite entertaining moments.
Well, let's come back with a few of our favourite topics from the year, actually, after we take our second ad break. And I see there's a couple of text messages coming in there as well. CRKC first birthday was last Saturday, was the official day for them. So, yeah, it's a year for us. Okay, we'll be back just after these. Text us on 086-353-7782.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're very welcome back to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. And I'm Francis Nesbitt from Crowan Cottages. And I'm joined, as usual, by Mags Morrissey from Hedgehog Bakery out in Thomastown. We're coming to the end of the show. It's the final section of the show today. We're live on Fridays from 4 to 5. And the show is repeated on Mondays from 4 to 5. And you can get in touch with us during the week. The easiest way, email kitchengarden@crkc.ie. Now, we're talking about having done 52 weeks of the show. So it's a year, the official birthday of the radio station was last Saturday, but it's we're celebrating a year of the show today, and you've brought in some cake.
Barnbrack.
I suppose traditional this time of the year. How very, very appropriate.
I actually think we should eat it all year. It's fabulous.
It is lovely, isn't it?
Yeah. Just have a taste of that. Yeah.
Now, there's no candles in it, but I suppose it would be wouldn't be great now bringing fire into the studio.
I didn't know whether you'd want to sing and stuff, so I thought I wouldn't put you under pressure.
Happy birthday to us. I actually saw a clip on Facebook recently of some composer who hated the tune of Happy Birthday. And he thought it was just high in all the wrong places and the emphasis was in all the wrong places. So he went through this little exercise in a 2-minute video of rewriting Happy Birthday to You. It just makes it so much nicer.
Oh, really?
Actually, he was right as he's going, look. Anyway, I'm not going to sing new or old version, but Happy Birthday.
Happy
and
birthday.
Thanks for the Barnbrack.
Yeah, I made Barnbrack on whatever, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Mm. Oh, that's really tasty.
Isn't it?
Mm, that is
and it's
tasty.
Like light and flavoursome and a little bit of fruit and everything. It's really nice. I'm going to keep making
Did
it.
Did you
actually.
Bring us in a cup of tea? Oh, a cup of tea.
No, but I brought you in a whole loaf, though.
Oh, that's
a whole
lovely
cake of it. Actually, one of the other highlights of the year was introducing the nature notes. Okay. We've done an awful lot of really interesting things, from otters to blackbirds and swans and moths, all sorts of
migration.
Things.
Migration, no, it's great.
Migration,
it really
and hibernation, there are all sorts of things. So yeah, it is. It's been a good addition, actually. I can't remember when it started.
I hope our listeners enjoy all of these things that we do every week.
Well, I was speaking to a man last week, actually, who loves the show.
Excellent.
So we have quite a few listeners in Thomastown, anyway.
And there's a few online that are always nice and complimentary on Twitter as well. So thank you to those who listen to the show on the podcast from further afield than Kilkenny City.
But if anyone has any ideas or anything that they'd like us to cover,
get in touch. And the easiest way would be email kitchengarden@crkc.ie, or you can text the show while we're live on air, and you can text the station 086-353-7782. Or if you're on Twitter, drop us a note on the Twitter machine. I'm at NesbittF and Mags is at Mags Morrissey. And if you want anything covered on the show, we'll go off and do all of the research for you, and then we'll come in and talk about it. And that's one of the things that I love about the show. Like, we talk about stuff that you and I love, but you have to kind of go off and learn a little bit about it before you come in, so it sounds like you know what you're talking about. I love learning new bits and pieces.
I that's probably one of my favourite things as well, because you decide on a topic, you know a little bit about it and you're madly interested in it, but then when you think about the facts of it, you're kind of going, oh, I'm a bit sketchy on that and that and that, and then you have to go off and read it.
Yeah.
Generally on a Friday morning or whatever, but I often start thinking about something early in the week, just, you know, what would be interesting, what's topical, and then do a little bit of research then as the week goes on. So I really like that. I think it's actually sort of good for me. It kind of keeps you, you know, like I have to go off now and check about chlorophyll and carotene and stuff and leaves.
I think you'll probably find that I'm right there. But
I'm sure.
But what I love about all of that is, like, I keep all of the notes for every show, and we've covered a massive number of topics, but it kind of passes in your notebook there filled with notes. If we weren't doing it on a kind of structured basis, and for the show this Friday I need to know about, you'd keep meaning to learn about stuff and then kind of never get around to doing it, you know?
You would. Yeah. I would actually have great intentions and then wouldn't be so good at getting around to it. So yeah, it does. And it gives you kind of a structure of doing it. So I like that part of it too.
And it's also a fantastic excuse to go out and meet your heroes as well. So some of the people that we've interviewed over the years, so some of the local producers, some of the international chefs, the John McKenna when he was on, my God, there's some man to talk about.
Yes.
Ireland's bests.
Yeah.
All the places to kind of go and see around Ireland, meeting Diana Henry, one of my cookbook writer heroes, at Food on the Edge, and getting an interview with her, and I have a couple of those interviews ready to go now from next week. So it was like super kind of way to get out and meet people and then bring back their story to the listeners here in Kilkenny.
I know sometimes it makes me kind of you know, I'm thinking of making my beetroot pickle or something like that, but I go, I must have it made by Friday, so I'll get it done, you know. So yeah, it's good for that purpose as well.
And then bring it in, yeah.
And then bring it in, yeah.
There was kefir. I was thinking about having some kefir going for years, and it was only then that we started to talk about the fermented foods on the show that I really decided to get into it. So we hope we've inspired some of the listeners out there to think a little bit more about the food that they consume, and maybe even have helped with some of the jobs lists in the garden or some of the advice there. But as Mike said, if you have any ideas or comments or questions or anything that you'd like us to cover on the show, please get in touch. Now, happy birthday, us. And moving on from that, you wanted to talk a little bit about hibernation.
Hibernation, yes, kind of the time of the year for it. I think the change in the weather kind of this week and stuff, I'm sure a lot of animals are thinking about it. If you think about, what animals, if you think about hibernation, what comes to mind immediately?
Well, squirrel is what everybody would think of.
No? Okay, yeah.
Or bear?
A bear, yeah. Some bears, a couple of bears do hibernate. Hedgehog is what I think of, actually.
Oh, yeah.
And they're true hibernators. So they don't actually, it's not called sleeping. They kind of go into a torpor. So their heart rate would go with like 180 or something beats per minute. But in hibernation, it goes down to like 20.
My God.
Yeah. So, and it's for survival. It's to get them through the winter. So they need to eat a pile in the autumn, and then they find somewhere nice and kind of dry and cozy, and they will go into this kind of torpor state to survive the winter. But they have, and most animals do have this inbuilt kind of alert system that if it gets too cold and they're in danger of freezing, they'll wake up. So hedgehogs generally will start to hibernate around October, November, December. But if it's very mild, they'll still be out maybe in December. But also during, even during their hibernation, they may come out, like to go to the toilet, to have a little nibble at something, and then they'll go back into hibernation again. So if you do see them, it's not as if hibernation has stopped or anything. It's just they've come out for something. But another animal that I thought about today was the frog.
Oh.
We don't think of the frog.
Does the frog hibernate?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
And we only have one frog in Ireland. The common frog.
Yeah.
And yeah.
They hibernate in long grasses, either.
Well, no, kind of like in hedgerows, somewhere damp and stuff, under large stones or under things and stuff, you know. So some frogs, like around the world and stuff, would hibernate in ponds and kind of under the debris at the bottom of a pond, maybe.
Our frogs actually spend very little time in water.
Yeah, just like
they just go there to mate, really.
And stuff. Yeah, and well, they'll all come out after hibernation and go wild for the and when we moved to Kilkenny, actually, there was a pond in the garden that was absolutely alive with frogs. It was full of frogs.
I think I know where this story is
going. Yeah, I think you've heard it before, I'm sorry.
And was there a dog involved?
Springer Spaniel, who just out of the city into the country. This is what I've been waiting for.
That Springer Spaniel has contributed to that 60% drop in the species numbers around the world. Should report that dog to the Worldwide Fund for Nature or whatever.
But when frogs are hibernating, they need to take oxygen through their skin. So that's how they breathe.
And they go into this kind of torpor state as well, do they?
Yeah, slow, I don't know exactly the details of what they do, but yeah, they go into a slow down kind of turn, switched off kind of state. So yeah, and then until springtime. And it's all about survival and stuff. It's too cold, it's not enough food and that. So,
and when everything slows down, you're using up less fuel, obviously, so you need less
You need food. Less and stuff, yeah.
Okay.
Their breathing will slow, heart rates will slow, all of that. So it's not like they're just asleep. It's quite a different kind of thing.
Right.
But hedgehogs need kind of little piles of logs, or you might find them under a garden shed or a compost bin or something, you know, pile of compost, that sort of thing.
Now, sadly, one of the places that they often choose to hibernate in is a great big pile of wood or bushes or prunings which have been left for a bonfire.
Yeah.
So in the notes that I have for jobs to do in the garden, one of those is if you're stacking up any of your kind of cuttings for a bonfire, as I am out at my place. So all of the blackcurrant bushes and prunings from the apple trees and all of that kind of stuff, they've all been piled up. Things that are too small to burn in the house. Give that a check. So what I do is I kind of pile it beside where I want to burn it, and then I can throw it onto the bonfire as I'm actually getting the bonfire going.
Good idea.
Just to make sure that there's nothing has fallen asleep in underneath there, because the last thing you want is to see some poor old creature crawling out after you've already lit the fire.
Yeah, true.
So if you are having a bonfire, check for hibernating hedgehogs or little creatures. So, and a lot of the creatures that we think of hibernating don't actually hibernate. They just kind of slow down.
Yeah, they do. A lot of them would slow down because there isn't food in that. So, and there's kind of different types of hibernation and stuff, but a hedgehog is actually a true hibernator. Actually, the puppy dog at home picked up a hedgehog there recently, and I wasn't there, but Michelle the woofer was there, and the puppy ended up in the house with the hedgehog, where he actually dropped the hedgehog in the house, and then the hedgehog went scampering and hiding through the house.
It was hedgehog house. It was a hedgehog house with an actual hedgehog.
She had never seen a hedgehog, I don't think, before, and then she had to actually retrieve it from wherever it went, behind the presses and stuff in the house, and get it back outside without the puppy.
Mind your hands as well. They are sharp little creatures.
So I don't know how he managed to do it, but anyway, he did. He might not do it again.
I'm surprised he didn't end up with a very sore mouth.
No, he was fine, actually. Mm.
I love seeing hedgehogs around the place. I really do. It just, they're so cute. And
they are. And they're really the gardener's friend and everything.
They really,
so
they're
really are good
they're
for,
not going to dig up anything on you, and they'll eat slugs and snails. Like, what more do you want?
Yes,
we should
exactly.
all have a dozen of them in the garden and
you
mind just, them.
But you could have them. You don't see them very often in that. I've seen them a couple of times, but I wouldn't see them regularly, to be honest. And I suppose if you're out at night, like they are they're more active at night, so you'll see them in the evenings a little bit. But I could go through weeks and weeks and weeks and not see one. And I know they're around, though.
It might be the case now that if you see them during the day, there's something wrong with the poor little creature.
Yeah, that generally is the case.
Actually. I've munched my way through another slice of the barn brack there
nice,
while
it?
You were chatting away. It's really, really nice. Are you going to give us the recipe for this now?
Yes. I do indeed.
Yeah, because and then we might include it in the notes for this week's show. And speaking of which, if you wanted to listen back to this show or a podcast of any of the other shows, if you visit thekitchengarden.ie, you'll find all of the shows that are up there. And you can stream them online or you can download them for a podcast for later. The recipe
I'll
for brownbread. Yes.
So it's 450 grams of strong white flour. So it is a yeasted loaf. Half level teaspoon of ground cinnamon, same of mixed spice, pinch of salt. And
not too much cinnamon in there now. Like now that you mention it, there's a little hint, but it's not overpowering, which is lovely.
The cinnamon, mixed spice and nutmeg. So it just gives a little spicy kind of feel to it or taste to it. Quarter teaspoon of nutmeg, 30 grams of butter, 20 grams of fresh yeast. I put in about 50 grams of caster sugar because of the fruit and everything. You don't need a lot of sugar.
Sweet,
300 mils of milk, warm, one egg, sultanas, currants, like about 300 grams between your sultanas and your currants, and some chopped mixed peel, 55 grams of mixed peel. So put your dry ingredients together and sieve your flour and your spices and your salt and your and then add your yeast into your milk, mix all those together, and your sugar, and then you want to knead that. So if you have a mixer, throw that all into a mixer for like 9 minutes on slow and with a dough hook and knead it. If not, you need to knead it by hand, and it shouldn't take any more than 9 minutes either. It's a nice dough. And then once you've kneaded, then you add your fruits, so your sultanas, raisins and your mixed peel in, and leave it sit somewhere warm, covered, for about an hour.
And let the yeast do their thing.
Let the yeast, and it rises up beautifully, actually, and it looks quite nice. So, and you want to, that will make, just trying to think how many I made, that should make kind of two loaf tins if you want to make it like that. So divide it out. You need to roll it. And we're going to describe this on radio. This is a bit easier.
She's making all sorts of strange movements on the other side.
You want to roll it into a roll shape so that it's nice and smooth on the top and all your seams are in the bottom.
Okay.
Yep. And then pop it into your tin. Leave it for another like 45 minutes to an hour until it's nicely risen into the oven. At about 210 degrees, I would give it some water in the bottom of the oven so that the yeast, so that it can rise nicely, and it gives it a little bit of a sheen. So just a baking tray with boiling water into the bottom of the oven, and then when it's baked, it should be nicely golden. You may need to just take it out of the tin and let the edges kind of crunch up a little bit, but the key to kind of having a nice top on it is when it's baked, take it out, and then you're going to use some sugar and water mix kind of to make a glaze.
Mm-hmm.
So 1 tablespoon of sugar and 2 tablespoons of water cooked together until that's kind of syrupy, and then just brush the top of it with the syrup and then pop it back in the oven. Just gives, you know, the way you see that kind of nice glaze on top.
And it does. It has a lovely brown kind of glaze on the top there,
Back into the oven for like 2 or 3 minutes, and that'll kind of bubble a little bit, and then it's done. And it's fabulous warm, actually.
Now, yours is a very, very light brack because of the addition of the yeast, obviously, and it rises, and it's very, very light flavour to, or texture to it. It's lovely.
That is a barn brack. See, that's different. You know, you could kind of have like a Halloween kind of tea brack type thing, which would be a heavier sort of. So okay. It's just different. Okay. I rather that. I find it's nice.
I like this too. I really like that.
Yeah.
So you brought one in for me.
Brought you in one, yeah.
That's deadly buzz. Thanks a million. I'll have that for the week. Now, just a couple of quick jobs, because I wanted to play out on our theme music, given that it was our birthday this week. There's lots and lots of things that we can be doing. I have a page of jobs in front of me here that we could talk about over the month of November. There's plenty to be doing. But if you are still cutting your grass, and it is mild enough in some places, raise up the blades on the mower so that you're not cutting as low down on the grass, and that'll protect it a little bit from frost. You don't want it going all yellow for the winter. Now is the time to prune your blackcurrants, so cut back any of the stems that have fruited all the way down to the ground, and then that'll promote the growth of strong new shoots. And then, of course, take all of those cuttings and all of the cuttings that you've taken from the orchard or around your apple trees. Don't leave them lying around. Don't put them into the compost. Really, you need to dispose of them to prevent the kind of spread of any diseases. And if you are creating a bonfire, then be sure, like we said, to have a look underneath it for any hedgehogs before you set fire to it. And we're going to leave it at that now, I think, for this week. We'll play out on a little bit of music, the theme music from the show, and it's Paul Reed's beautiful piece of music. But we'll be back at the same time next Friday from 4 to 5 on The Kitchen Garden, and the show is repeated on Monday from 4 to 5. And as I said earlier on, you can listen back to this or any of the other shows on thekitchengarden.ie. Now stay tuned to Community Radio Kilkenny City for Maurice O'Connor. He's up after us and after this.